You're all set.
Great, thank you. We will call to order the committee meeting for the Independent Oversight Committee, District East. Today is January the 8th, 2025. It's 5:03 p.m. And Morgan, would you read the disclosure of conflicts of interest for us, please?
Sure. Do we have anyone that has to disclose a conflict of interest? If there is, the committee member needs to disclose why.
Me. And I don't agree with it, but the reason why is because I know the name of the mother of a member that we'll be talking about in executive session.
Thank you, Teresa. Okay, welcome and introductions. I am Susie Hessman, chairperson for the committee. Sarah?
Sarah McGovern, vice chair, IOC East.
Teresa?
Teresa Brooks, IOC District East committee member.
Ken?
Good evening, everyone. This is Kitty Cows. Happy New Year. And I'm a IOC committee member, District East.
Thank you. And Danielle?
Hello, IOC volunteer.
And Selena?
Hi, everyone. Sorry, my mute button got stuck there for a second. Happy New Year, Selena Kataria and IOC committee member.
Thank you. And then I think I just saw Tanya join us. Tanya, are you there?
I am. Hi, Tanya Schultz, the facility representative for ATPC, non-voting member.
Great. Thank you. Did I miss any committee members? Morgan, would you go through the other attendees for me?
Sure.
Thank you.
Christina, can you start us off?
I would love to. My name is Christina Hedges. I am the DDD Office of Individual and Family Affairs Administrator. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Katrine?
Hello, everyone. Good evening. Happy New Year. Katrine Filet, PRC Administrator with DDD.
Thank you. Bernice?
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Bernice Kuro and I'm PRC District East Chair.
Thank you. Trudy?
Hi, all. Happy New Year. I'm Trudy O'Connor, Quality Assurance Manager for District East.
Thank you. Casey?
Hi, I'm Casey Padilla. I'm with the Program Development Administration, and I'm here to present about the strategy moving forward.
Thank you. Sierra?
Hi, I'm Sierra Garland, and I am the Strategic Planning Administrator's assistant.
Thank you. Larry?
Larry Allen with the Arizona Department of Administration.
Thank you. Frederica?
Hi, this is Frederica Graham with Access.
Thank you. Cammy?
I am Camilla Parker. I'm with the Office of Individual and Family Affairs at Mercy Care.
Thank you. Michelle?
Hi, good evening. I'm Michelle Rademacher. I'm a DDD Independent Oversight Committee Liaison with the CARES Administration.
Thank you. I'm Morgan O'Hara. I'm the other DDD IOC liaison with the CARES Administration. And then we do have a phone number with us ending in 39. Maybe a member of the public.
If you press star six, it'll take you off of mute.
Hello, I'm sorry. I couldn't get it. My name is Adriana Molina, and I'm covering for Ian Wilson. I'm with United Healthcare Community Plan.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right, I think that's everybody.
Thank you, Morgan. Okay, our next agenda item is the strategic planning presentation and discussion. I'm not sure who is going to be presenting for that.
Me. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen. All right, so let's roll down. We'll go through and define what strategic planning is, why it's important, the recent DDD strategy efforts, the timeline, what we envision for the future, and then wrap up and next steps, and then any questions that you have. So it's been almost a decade since DDD last published a long-term strategic plan, and so we feel like the time is right to go ahead and revisit that. With your input, we want to build our five-year plan. We believe that it's a critical initial step in the process to gather from those that support the DDD program, and you'll have the opportunity to provide input that we'll be able to use in that planning process. We've begun to engage DDD members, family members, individuals supported by DDD, providers, associates, tribal nations, and any other interested parties. We did put out a survey so that they could answer it on their own time and in their own abilities. And it is open until the 24th of January. At the end of this presentation, you should have a better understanding of the what, the why, and the how, and the when for our strategic planning activities. So, what is strategic planning? We're mapping out the vision for the future and how we're going to get there. And so we're focusing mostly on this last column over here, the long-term 3 to 5. The operational planning is those short-term daily things that, you know, I want this thing and I'm not getting it, or it's case specific. And then the tactical stuff is something that is a smaller thing that's just quarterly or annually. But the strategic planning that we're working towards is the long term, so somewhere between 3 and 5 years. Our goal is to create that plan and have it shared by July of this year. Let's see. We don't need all that. So we'll jump to the why is it important. It clearly identifies long-term objectives and maps out how we're going to get to them. And then it aligns our goals with the realities. So I'm sure that you're all aware that the population is growing exponentially. And so we're trying to figure out how we're going to meet the needs of that new population size. It gives us a clear sense of where we're going. And if our goals and objectives are the destination on the map, then the strategic plan is our navigation system. It's our version of Google, I guess. And our mission should always be front and center. And so we have that out there. The Division of Developmental Disabilities empowers individuals with developmental disabilities to lead self-directed, healthy, and meaningful lives. We want to make sure that that is always the target of our strategic planning. And in order to do that, we have to keep our focus there. The recent DDD strategy efforts have, I'm sure that most of you have heard the current to future tagline. And so the things that we worked on previously, 2020 to 2022, were the vendor call process, the access to care, quality management oversight and administration, claims processing, and augment the ACC device, or AAC devices, the nursing assessment process, and the tribal health program. All of those are working now and moving forward and making adjustments, because everything we do, we try to do it look at it, adjust it, make it work better. So currently we are working on improving the behavioral health services for DDD members and strengthening those that are available for them, making sure that we're hitting the dual diagnosis and positive behavior support training. We have had lots of opportunities available for people to do those trainings, and they have actually been taking advantage of those. So that's been really great. The implementation of the RFQVA just started, actually today was the first day for the new RFQVA. So all of our vendors are moving forward under that new contract. And then the NCQA accreditation is something that we're working on right now, and that is to strengthen the support that our support coordinators are providing and that DDD staff in general is providing to all of our members on a regular basis. So it is going to provide a structured standard so that there is more consistency. All right, our timeline. Right now we are in that gathering information and input. We're trying to define those priorities. We're going to get information. We're doing many, many meetings with everybody we could think of that we could get into their meetings for. And we're having this opportunity to present to you, and then we'll ask you some questions, get your feedback. Then someone is going through and reading every single comment on the surveys themselves, and then on all of the stuff that we collect from these meetings. And we're categorizing them and defining what our priorities are going to be moving forward. So then that'll take us a little while, and then we'll draft the strategic plan and then continue. We're going to make sure that after we draft it, we're not going to be like, okay, peace out, thanks for your input, and leave it. We want to make sure that we're touching base and reaching back out, making sure that we're doing that plan, do, check, act process where we're consistently looking for ways to continuously improve and just do a better job. So there will be multiple updates, and we're going to be reaching out to the community to have conversations and gather more feedback and then make adjustments. We do want to start with the actual strategic plan itself in July. But we did begin all of this gathering of the input in October. And we also checked with internal staff as well as reaching out to external. All right, so is it, who's on with me? I know it's not Angie. Christine, is it Christine?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, so, right on. So
I forgot that I was supposed to help facilitate this part. Sorry.
It's okay.
So we have three questions, as you can see here, that we are going to be posing to all of you to answer and kind of give any feedback that you have. So anything that you say, if you want to put it in the chat, come off mute, please feel free. Sierra is here and she's going to be capturing all of that. And as you know, this meeting is recorded, so we can always come back and make sure that we've kind of nailed down exactly what you've said. So the first question we really want you to think about is, what are your hopes or goals for the people that we or the division serve over the next 5 years? Yeah, Kin.
Can you hear me? You can see noise. Okay. So I would like to see, I hope that there'll be more monitoring of the group homes, because with the tons of IRs we are looking at, I mean, you know, it is sad. So I guess with more monitoring of the group homes, which I think is like, oh, impromptu, like, you know, they don't even like go and visit once, you know, and it has to be more often. And to keep track of what is going on in the group homes is not by just one visit in a year or in a visit in 6 months. It has to be very frequent, and it has to be, you know, put it as in impromptu. It's not like, oh, we'll be coming tomorrow at 3 p.m. Oh, yeah. All right. Okay, let's have all the stuff all, you know, all properly, you know. No, I think there's we need to do more with these group homes that is just mushrooming everywhere and all the IRs we're getting. So I think that is very important because our, you know, the community, you know, we are looking at the aging, the population is going into group homes. I shouldn't even say aging, but, you know, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, that they are out of the being kids or even, you know, in the, for the children. So that's one thing I would like really to see with that. And also the other thing is for the parts of the lives of the members is probably a lot of our members can actually contribute to the society by working. Many of them. Just take my son's DTA, for example. There are so many members there that can do things. However, what they need is a coach, a job coach, one-on-one, not one that just go there and say, okay, three months training, and then you are there on your own. They need that someone constantly. I know funding is you know, funding, you know, manpower is lacking, but that is so important. If you want them to contribute, we have to provide them the opportunity and the sources to help them get back into it, because a lot of them can do stuff, but no, they're just at a DTA, you know, socializing and things like that. You wonder why, because I mean, that is not, I mean, you know, I mean, not say that they have to do a full-time job. No, you know, even at a store doing packing or, you know, whatever that they can do, but the problem is they need people to be with them. They can't just go there. It's not they cannot work. They can, but they just need somebody there to be with them and helping them, coaching them, like a buddy, you know. So again, you know, this comes with funding and a lot of, you know, manpower, not enough people to do that or things like that. So I think that would definitely improve their life. Because once they work, you know, so-called, you know, the things they contribute to the community, they feel good about themselves. And many of them, like I said, there's so many, I'm sure members can do that. And I'm just looking at my son's DTA, I know 90% of the members in there, they are very capable of doing, you know, jobs. So I would definitely like to, you know, see that improve. And not just focus on something that is just like, oh, you know, we want to see them do this. Well, but yeah, we need to do something to help them, not just say, you know, oh, can put them there, do this, do that. Oh, we have plans for this. We have people, resources to help them. So that's just my 2 cents. Thank you.
Thanks, Ken. I do want to point out that you were cutting out a little bit. So if you do want to come off mute again, maybe try keeping your camera off and you can see if that helps. I know there's some kind of wild storms going around right now. So, but I think we were able to capture everything.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that wants to?
I would like to second all the things that Ken said. I think she's spot on with those. I also have personal experience with my daughter living in group homes for the last 11 years, and the quality of care is terrible. The vendors make a lot of money and provide very low quality of direct care providers in the homes. And we've experienced this with over the years, probably 8 to 10 different vendors. So it's not just one agency. It's over and over and over again. Lack of accountability. It seems as though the division provides a technical assistance, but nobody ever gets booted out or held accountable for their action or lack of action, because there's just not enough providers. You know, when we do a vendor call, one provider responds. And so does that really give you a choice? No, you have no choice because you have to accept that. I'd also like to see a lot more options for housing. I would love the option of my daughter being able to live in a situation like my mother-in-law lives in, where she's in an adult community. She's at Robeson Reserve, where she has her own apartment, but yet the socialization, the medical care, transportation, community eating, all of that is available and flourishing. And I think she'd do really, really well and love to be in an environment like that. It's not institutionalized. It right now she is at home. The group home hardly ever takes her anywhere. And it's a very sad, isolated existence. And with the same thing that Ken was talking about with work, she's one who is more functional than a DTA, but not ready to be able to have work on her own. And the support structure is just not there for her to flourish out in being able to be a functional member of our society. That's it.
Thanks. Those are great suggestions. Teresa.
I second everything that was said before as well, and totally agree about the group home situations. I hear nightmare stories all the time. I've had my own nightmare experience with trying to find a group home, and it was so bad we pulled out. There are different options. When my both sets of my parents were aging, we looked at different facilities, and I kept thinking, man, this would be so good for my son to have this. And even living in a group home, he's isolated. He's isolated at my home because he does not do well in a DTA. And so he's significantly impacted by his developmental disability. So I think we need to get more creative on how we handle living situations for our population. I would like to see an improvement in services for members, and I put on their group homes. I'd also like to see us empower members, guardians, and parents to make more informed decisions regarding services and providers. One of the ways we can do that is through a rating system. And give them information. It just seems like I get all my information from other parents, so it's really difficult. And then to provide better, safer environments for those who are at an even higher risk, those who are nonverbal and those who are severely impacted by their disabilities, where they don't have a voice for themselves. When you posted you had a slide that had the goal of DDD. I don't know what it was kind of the overall goal.
Statement. Yeah. That one.
Yeah. Yes. I read that and I see to lead self-directed. For me, that my son can't really self-direct. So it makes it hard. I am his voice. I am his advocate. He doesn't know, you know, what's available to him. So I would like to see somehow embrace the people like my son in that statement. I don't know how you do that. And that's all I have to say.
Thanks, Teresa. Mm-hmm. Sarah.
Hello. I would agree with everything that's been said here. Of course, we all have very, very different situations. And my son has benefited greatly from a lot of the DDD programs. So I've seen a lot of really positive things come out of the services that he's received. But I also am completely aware, reading the incident reports, I have the same feeling where with group homes, there really is, you know, it can't, I've been doing this for a while now. I mean, Susie's a little more of a lifer than I am, but to be honest, when you read over and over and over again, you begin to say, you know, it just can't be that this is an isolated incident. Some of these things are pretty hair raising. And I don't know if a rating system would be helpful, but something there, because, you know, again, we have a very vulnerable population and not everybody can be expected or to understand exactly how to handle these very, very tense and high risk situations. But with that said, I agree with everything that everybody said. And one area where I consistently see a gap when we talk about being independent is transportation. And this is just something that comes up with me all the time, where I have a son, we have made huge efforts to have him involved in the community and the DTA. He has a part-time job. But it's just that transportation piece is really, really hard to nail down. And so, and that is something where I see independence being something where someone like my son, who's a little bit on the more moderate side, would really benefit. It's very, very kind of hit and miss and kind of an afterthought from just my experience. So anyway, there you go.
Thanks, Sarah. Anyone else want to throw their 2 cents or 5 cents out there for question number one before we move on to question number two?
Mine's in the chat. I also agree with the group homes. Many of the staff don't even speak English. They're not skilled in working with individuals that maybe have some challenges. And they don't create a place that feels like a home. And it's odd because the person lives there, but it should be their home. And it just, I understand it's their work environment, but it's also the person's home and we should treat it that way. And they need to be trained on how to do that. So those are my thoughts.
Thanks, Cammie.
And I want to echo on Sarah with the transportation. Absolutely. I think that that's a big piece that continues to hinder the growth of members and isolates them. And, you know, with the ability that we have with rideshare, I mean, to be able to give some kind of financial support that way, my daughter was able to, you know, it's expensive. You know, but she was able to, you know, get a ride share, go down to Safeway and get her Starbucks coffee and socialize with people there. And, you know, I'm like, okay, that costs us $8 to go down, $8 for the coffee, $8 to come back. That was an expensive day, honey, you know. But it really, it makes a huge difference with even something as simple as that, that she would look forward to for her day. So yeah, I echo the transportation, whether it's simple things like that, socialization, going to the grocery store, doctor's appointments, work, school, all of that.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's a great point. We can create these great events and senses of community, but if we don't have any way to get there, then there's not really any point. So, okay, are we ready to move on to question number two, everyone? We can always circle back around to question number one if we need to. Okay, let's go for it. So question number two, what part of their lives do members want the division to help improve in the future?
I would say, learning how to make friends with people, getting into their life of like making friends, as well as finding someone like a relationship. I know that we don't think about those things as a person that just can find friends and find a relationship, but it can be difficult. And it doesn't seem like there's very much support from the division on getting those. I mean, who would have thought that having a girlfriend would be such a big deal, but it can be for someone that is, you know, has challenges in that area, but they deserve to have that. And so I don't know, that would be something that I would say.
I definitely agree with that. Whether it's a girlfriend, boyfriend, or whether it's making friendships that are lasting, because I'm the center of my daughter's whole world. She calls me 30 times a day, you know, to tell me every good thing and bad thing and, you know, advocate for her. And to be able to have friendships or relationships or both beyond, and especially she's autistic, so socialization is her number one disability. And so to be able to improve that would be life-changing.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think even as an adult without a developmental disability, making friends is hard, but add on having a developmental disability and then you've got more challenges. I think Ken raised her hand next. Sorry, Teresa. We'll come to you right after. Ken.
So I have the camera off. So other than the job part, I was thinking, since just like support coordinator that comes, you know, like quarterly, I was just thinking if regarding the social part, if DDD has somebody that would come like once a week and be with the member, you know, like friends, you know, socialize with them and things like that. So it's a buddy system, and you know, they do come like instead of like every quarterly, they come every week, visit, so that they're familiar and our members kind of know, okay, we have a friend there. And there's this friend that's consistent. I know mine goes to CTA and he has his friends, but I think that's different when you have like a special friend that comes visit with you, spend time with you and things like that. And it also helps, because in the long term, if the members are on their own and, you know, they have no family, they go, there is this person that they remember that they built that friendship from young. You know, I mean, not say young, but younger, you know, until when they age, there's this, you know, just like when you have friends, when it's from high school, from, you know, and I think it makes a difference, because then it becomes, there's a sense of security. So wherever they go in the future, if they have to go to a group home because the parents are gone and things like that, there is this person that will help them in their life, because this person has been in their life, not those come and go, like, you know, but somebody. So, I mean, I just was just thinking along that line that can really help improve, you know, our members' life, you know, as they age. So, yeah, that's one thing, another sense from me.
Before you jump to Teresa, I'm going to add on to Ken. So when my daughter was younger, we did have peer support through the Mark Center, but she aged out of that. It was working very well. And then, of course, when it's working well, let's just take it away. So then she turned 25 and that program was no longer available. And that actually was, she would come, the peer would come twice a week. And it worked really nicely. So
thank you both, Susie and Ken. Teresa, sorry, I'm having a hard time seeing. Teresa, you're up.
I just hit the wrong button. I hit my hand raise button instead of my microphone. I know I've heard transportation is an issue. I agree with that. I also, and it kind of goes along with what Ken and Susie said, I would like to see services for adult members improve. It seems like there's all these things for when they're younger, and even therapies. It's really, really, really hard to find good therapists for an adult like my son. So I think we need to, it's like once they age out, it leaves us floundering for what to do. And there just needs to be more support for when they age out with these programs.
Teresa, can I ask a clarifying question? When you say therapist, do you mean like behavioral health therapist or OT, PT, speech,
OT,
or
speech, all around? Music, all of them, all around, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Most of them want to work with children, and I get it, but my son needs therapies too, so.
For sure. Anybody else want to come off mute and or put it in the chat? I think after this slide, Casey does have a QR code that we can send you guys or that you can scan so that if you are able or want to go back and have these conversations with the members in your life and then kind of fill it in later, we'll. When does it end, Casey? At the end,
the 24th.
The 24th. So you'll have some more time to put in whatever you want or talk to other members or the members in your life and then put that in. And Casey, correct me if I'm wrong, but you all are reading every single survey that comes through.
Every single one. And it's me. So I know that it's absolutely happening. And if I have any questions, if you like it, it's anonymous. Unless you put your information in there. But if you put your information in there and I have any questions, I've actually called multiple people to get clarification to make sure I'm putting what you actually are trying to communicate. So we'll talk about that when we're done here.
Sorry, I jumped ahead.
It's okay.
Anybody else on question two? I feel like I should sing the Jeopardy song before I know when to move on. Okay, question number three. How can the division ensure that individuals are at the center of decisions about their own lives?
Well, kind of to follow up with what I had said before about it, you're not really making a decision when only one vendor answers your vendor call. I think that's a big part of it. When you don't have therapists available, when you don't have group homes available, you're not really making a choice. And group homes move in housemates without talking to you. You have no choice who lives in your home, who's in the room next to you, what food they're cooking, what snacks you have. I mean, the group home my daughter's in right now, they don't even have bottled water or filtered water. And who in Arizona drinks tap water? It tastes like dirt, you know? So, I mean, that's a basic necessity. So, yeah, you want to have decisions that you can control in your life. Do you have a key to your front door? No. Do you have a key to the mailbox? No. Just basic human things that just don't happen, regardless of what DDD policies are, it doesn't translate down to the ground, to regular life.
Great points. Anybody else? Ken?
Yes.
Yeah, Ken, go for it. You don't have to raise your hand.
I agree with Susie. I think it is so important that, first of all, we need to know before, you know, we have our kids in the group homes or the members, we need to know what are their needs. Medical needs. You know, whatever needs they have, such as medical needs. And then from there, we give them the choices. Rather than, you know, you just put them there and then say, okay, this is like, so you're saying, okay, you don't know who is who, and then you don't know whether your next door is going to punch a hole in their room and things like that. So in order to, you know, for the individuals at a, to make, do have the decision making, we need to provide, we need to understand their needs first and then provide the choices, the correct, so-called the correct choices. Then, you know, that's where then we kind of understand. And then once they know that their needs are met, first of all, you need to know your needs are met, then I think that would be, that's how they can decide whether it is appropriate for them or not. So, another one, Sen.
Thank you for your sense, Ken. I appreciate them. I think another way to kind of frame this question and kind of think about it is, what can the division do to make sure that members or the people, you know, the people that we're doing all of these planning meetings for are really a part of the decision-making process? So if we're thinking about it, yeah, Danielle or Danelle, sorry about that.
I have a question for Suzanne. I am the owner of the group home that my kids are in. And when we have our PCSP meetings, we always ask the parents if they have any issues with, you know, the members that are in the house. And you're saying that your daughter doesn't have, isn't even provided, you know, the appropriate water. Do you raise any of these issues at any of the meetings, and who's, and how do they address that in the meetings? That would be something I'd suggest there. And how do they respond when you bring up those issues? I find that appalling that they don't even have water available at the group home.
It is appalling. My daughter's situation is so intense that we have bi-weekly meetings, video meetings, and we have about 15 to 20 people on those calls. So high level people in DDD are fully aware of all of her circumstances. What we get is a lot of excuses from the group home.
Oh, okay. Well, that's unfortunate.
It is.
Okay. Well, what I did was just opened my own group home and put my own kids in my group home.
And that's great that you did that. I actually started my own agency when she was living in an IDLA because I couldn't get providers to show up, or, you know, they show up for a day or two and leave.
Yeah.
And you know, it was very hard after the pandemic to keep providers,
right,
when, especially when you're a small agency and the only person they were caring for was her. So you,
right,
wasn't, you know, necessarily giving them all the hours that they wanted and right, have all right, these right, other benefits that I could provide. I couldn't give them health care and, you know, things like that. So it became very, lots of times I would be the one who would go out there and do the care for her going away from my own job because of, you know, lack of provider. So it just became where I couldn't, it wasn't sustainable for me as a small place. I'm glad it's working for you with doing that in a group home for your kids.
Okay. I was just checking to see what the response was, if you had any issues with them and how they're responding to it.
Yeah, unfortunately. I mean,
that's the group home
shows up on the call and they say things like, oh, well, let me check with the other nurse. You know, I don't have that information. I'll email it to you. And then we don't get any email and nothing happens for the next 2 weeks. And then we show up at the meeting and the same, it's like rinse and repeat, you know, so it's very, very frustrating.
Okay. Sorry about that.
Thank you.
I was just going to say, Danelle, not all vendors are created equal. And you have a good motive to run a good group home. And I applaud you on that. I think that's why almost all of us on that first question mentioned group homes, because it's a huge issue.
Oh, I understand. My son was in several before I opened my own, and that's why I opened my own, was because for that very reason. So yeah, I get it completely.
So I think one thing that we can kind of glean from that is that when, you know, when there are meetings, especially when members are in group homes, if we can actually invite the members and ensure that they're there if it's appropriate. I know there's times when it's not, but I think there's also times when we, the division or other entities, could do a better job ensuring that the member is actually there to have their voice heard, whether that be actually their voice or another way that they communicate. So Sarah.
Well, I was just going to say, this is a really hard question for me to answer, because I'm the guardian of my son. So, you know, we always give him the opportunity to be involved in his decisions. We try to ask him. I'm a social worker, so I'm good at asking all those good questions and motivational interviewing and things to get responses, even though it's hard to do. But I guess I need a little more, like, what are the options for including, you know, what are we talking about when we talk about this particular kind of question? Because there's so many layers to it. There's guardianship, there's cognitive ability to make decisions. There's all these things. You know, if we included my son, he would, you know, he'd want to, you know, have 15 girls come to his birthday party every single week, sponsored by DDD with a free party bus. You know, that's what he would want. And he has no understanding of money. $10 is the same as a piece of paper, a post-it note, as far as he's concerned. So it's hard for me to understand, when we talk about including them in and making the center of these decisions, what kind of options are we thinking about, or what does that process look like? If I can get a little more information.
Well, I mean, I think that's kind of a really good point, in that the division serves such a vast variety of members that it really could look completely different from just even on this committee. It sounds like all of you have kind of very different situations, with maybe with some overlap here and there. But I think that's kind of a really good thing to think about, that there might not ever be one kind of one size fits all for any of these, or especially what, you know, what your son being at the center of his decisions might look completely different than Susie's daughter and whatnot. And so I think that's a really good point to make in and of itself. And
okay.
Sorry, I don't really have a clarifying question.
I'm gonna think on this one a little bit more.
Perfect. No, I think that's great. I mean, and if you're, you know, if your son wants to ask that DDD brings him a party bus for all girls, he can definitely put that on the survey.
Have we ever thought about, we have PACs, we have parent advisory committees for a lot of the programs that we have for families. And I'm wondering if we ever have anything like a MAC, like a member advisory committee.
So the division actually did just start our member advisory committee, or member, what are we calling it? Member advocacy council. Okay. But it's similar to that. They are open meetings. I believe the next one is happening January 22nd at 2 p.m. They're on our website in the public councils and committees part, which is, it's actually the one right below the IOC. So if you know how to get that, actually here, I'll just put it in our chat. How about that? It's like the third one down. It tells you exactly when the next one is, and you can see the recordings from the previous ones as well.
Okay. I don't know if my son would be able to sit still or sustain interest long enough to serve on one of those committees, even though his mother would love it. But we're different people. So
we definitely, I think we only have like one or two, maybe three members on the committee. It's primarily family members. So if we could get a member to even participate just for a little while, I think that would be awesome. We always love hearing from members. We also have our self-advocate meeting if your son ever wants to attend one of those as well. And I think that's on, that might not, That might not be on there on that website, but I can get you that information if you want it.
I'll poke around a little bit.
Okay. Does anybody else have anything that they want to? Last chance for you to throw your cents out there. Okay, well, Casey, I'll pass it back over to you then.
All righty. Thank you very much. Thanks, everybody, for engaging in that. Sometimes we come to these meetings and it's like crickets. So I very much appreciate that you were all speaking out. So thank you. This is the QR code for the surveys, and Sierra just dropped links into the chat as well. Please feel free to go in and do the full survey. It's actually larger than these three questions. These three questions are in that survey, but there are multiple other questions also included in there. Share it, put it on your social media. You can give to anybody that is in Arizona. You can have your families do it. You can have your children do it. The more it's shared, the more information we're going to get, the better chance we have of hitting the nail on the head with what our actual vision needs to look like for our strategic plan. So please share away. And then this last one is just any questions? Teresa?
Yes. I'm sorry if I missed it. Is this going out to the public?
It's already been sent out. It was sent to anybody that we had an email for in our system. It was sent to every person whose email we have in the system. I think we're running into some problems with people thinking it's trash, or because it looks like junk mail. And I think it's going to spam and it's getting thrown away and it's just not getting out there. They did just put it into the newsletter as well, a reminder about it and the link. But like I said, if I'm not a part of any of the social media groups, bazillion. So if you're on one of the parent groups, please feel free to share the links and tell them to get in there and get her done, because my heart is that right now we have very limited amount of replies, and I would love to see it like multiplied by a zillion, because I want to make sure that we're actually hearing what our members need and we're focused on what is going to help them the most moving forward. Because creating a strategic plan is fantastic, but if you trip at the start, you're never making it to the finish. So we just want to hear as much as we can from as many people as possible. So share, 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 and share again. And like I said, all of you are more than welcome to go on and do it yourselves. And you are not required to share your name or anything, but if you would like to, you can. And if I have any questions, I'll reach out to you.
Does DDD still have a Facebook page? And is it active? Because I never see anything from there.
There is a Facebook page. I'm not certain how active it is, honestly. I have requested that the survey be put on, but we have to get everything approved. Like any post that goes out has to be approved before it can go. And so I'm not certain at this point if it's still in that stage, or if they're just saying, we're just going to go ahead and keep it in the newsletter and keep doing those things. That's why I'm like, as a parent, please feel free to share it and give to everyone you've ever met. If somebody, like, you blink at them on the street, give it to them. So
I'll try to share in the groups that I'm in.
That would be fantastic. I greatly appreciate that.
I'm going to ask an old lady question.
Okay.
So how do I share this QR code? I just tried to save it as an image, but it wants to save as a web page.
Yeah, that's all it will do is save as a web page, because the way your camera works is it translates it automatically. But if you get that link out of the chat, you can share the links themselves.
Okay.
I can send you the links at the end of the meeting as well.
Okay, the ones that Sierra sent?
Yes. Okay.
All right. I'll just cut and paste that. Yeah. Sorry to sound like, you know.
No, you're good. I'm glad you asked, because I'd rather that you ask than just be like, well, I guess I don't get to do it. So, any other comments, questions, concerns? No. Well, thank you very much for allowing us to come and speak with you and get your input. We really do greatly appreciate that. If you have any questions or anything, you can feel free to reach out to any of us. Our emails are on the invite, so feel free to do that. And I thank you again, and I'll get out of your hair.
Thank you very, very much. I think that was a wonderful presentation. Thank you. Wonderful.
Have a wonderful night.
Thanks, you too.
Bye-bye.
Okay, let me go back to our agenda here. Okay, a discussion on conflict of interest. We have never had anything come up before, and so I felt a little blindsided by what happened at last month's meeting with all of a sudden Larry announcing that Teresa was having a conflict of interest. And so I would like to understand the process and who is making the decision on that. And do we go to an appellate court or Supreme Court, or how does that decision-making process work on whether there's indeed a conflict or not? I don't know if Larry's still on. Is he still on?
Oh, was that a question for me?
Well, I'm assuming that you would be the person that answered it.
Okay. Well, I mean, I can tell you what a conflict of interest, in the context of our public meetings, a conflict arises when a committee member is involved in a meeting that could potentially influence their judgment or decision making based on what they see or read as they read an IED report or something that should come up during a meeting. And, you know, the conflict of interest rule is in place to address transparency and accountability in public meetings. And exactly the way it happened, that the start of the meeting, when Teresa voiced that she did have a conflict, that's exactly how it needs to play out. Teresa submitted the form to me, stating that she had a conflict, that she doesn't agree with it, but, in the view of, at least in my view, there is a conflict, there.
You're the decision maker then on whether there's indeed a conflict?
In the meetings, yes.
Okay. And are you able to provide policy or statutes or something that lets us know that you're the judge on questions of conflict?
Yeah, sure. Arizona Revised Statute Article 8 lists the conflict. Definition of conflict. Okay. Also, the Arizona Attorney General's Office also outlines that as well. I'd be happy to send that out to the committee.
Okay.
For y'all to review. And it's a gray area here too, because, you know, we're not making $1 million contract real estate deals here, right?
Right.
So it is a gray area, but we're erring on the side of caution here and calling it a conflict. If you don't agree with that, as a committee, you can certainly vote on it and send me an official question from the committee, and I can get an official answer for you.
Okay.
I'd be happy to send that out to the committee, the statutes and the rules and the Attorney General handbook.
Okay.
I'd
appreciate that. I think this is just the first time we've had an issue arise, and wanted to understand the whole process and how that decision is made, or if it's voted on by the committee that it's a conflict. Of course, we want to be cautious, but I guess as a business owner, I think of a conflict as far as if it benefits somebody, you know, like you're saying, real estate deal. So is it benefiting somebody financially on the committee? Obviously, that's not going to be the case. And I can't even think of one that it would be in our capacity. But I didn't feel like Teresa had the opportunity to explain to the committee exactly the circumstances in order for us to even consider in if we were to vote as a committee, whether that was a conflict. Teresa, you've got your hand raised. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I think one of the things that has me stumped on here is in this situation, I don't benefit in any way. And if you look at the bottom of the IOC committee member disclosure form, it has three questions that I would answer to determine if I have a conflict of interest. And one of them is, the first one is, could the decision affect either positively, negatively, or interest or an interest of the officer or employee or the officer's, or employee's relative? But it says at the first, it says to determine whether a substantial interest exists. And so it can't just be, maybe a little conflict. It says substantial interest. And so that's what I'm having a conflict with, is the wording. And I read the one of the statutes, and I couldn't see in there where it was for me. So.
Right. No, it's full of legalese. I agree. And it's kind of hard to read. But in my opinion, there is a conflict there. You have knowledge of an instance, and of an individual, and other committees do not, the other committee members do not, which would cause a conflict in my opinion. And then at that point, you know, once a conflict is determined, then the person with the conflict needs to recuse themselves from discussion and voting on that particular matter, so they don't influence or determine the outcome of that particular issue that the committee's going to.
I would totally agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would totally agree with you, Larry. And we've talked about this. The issue I have is I only know who this person is. I don't have a relationship with this person, and I absolutely don't know the member at all. So, and the only reason why I knew was because everything wasn't redacted. So, does it influence my looking at the incident reports? Absolutely not. So, because like I said, I don't have a relationship with this person.
Tanya, go ahead.
As far as I know, the member's no longer in our district. So I don't know if, Susie, if you're like able to reach out to, I don't even know what district, I don't know if we would know what district she's in, to let the other committee know, hey, we had some concerns, can you keep an eye out, right? But I don't know that a conflict even exists anymore because she's not in our district anymore. She's not here. So we wouldn't have her IRs or anything anymore. So that's just my thoughts.
Well, I think the issue was, what Teresa was bringing up was, what, not the what's not happening now is what happened in the past, right? If I'm not mistaken, is that true, Teresa? I don't want to speak for you, but so yeah. I don't.
Yeah, yeah, it's so, from previous. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that I would want to pass the buck by any means, but there is a committee in the area where she's at that would be able to take over for us. I don't know. Like I said, I don't know how, if it would be Susie or who it would be that would be able to reach out and say, hey, we had these concerns about, you know, the quality of care, about the nursing services. Could you guys just keep an eye and make sure things are being appropriately taken care of, that you're not seeing, these are the types of things we were seeing. Can we just make sure that's not occurring, right? And kind of hand it over to that other committee, because that's where she's at now.
I'm certainly happy to do that. I guess I'd have to ask Morgan and Michelle to tell me which district she's currently in to be able to reach out to that, you know, appropriate committee.
But doing that, they won't be able to know, they won't know who this member is either. So they can't keep an eye out, really.
You're right. Because now that everything is totally redacted the way that it is, there's not even initials or any kind of way to, There's no continuity. You can't, as individual members, when we're looking at these incident reports, we no longer have the ability we used to. You know, rules have changed on what gets redacted and what doesn't, over and over and over again. It's a moving target. So it used to be that we could at least see first name, last initial, and so you could track and see, you know, oh, we had 6 incidents this month all about the same thing for this individual, and it looks like the group home's not doing anything to change what they're doing, and we're having the same recurring issues over and over again, you know, which made it, it gives a lot more context to the incidents when you're able to have that information, especially the way we as a committee are dividing up our incidents so that we're all seeing the same kind of incidents. So I'm seeing suicide reports over and over. Well, if I can see that person's, at least their first name and last initial, oh yeah, Jack S is over and over. He's been, you know, threatening suicide. I can see that now. I don't have the ability to see that. So it makes our job really, really hard.
And
yeah,
different folders. Sorry, Larry.
No, it's okay.
I'll just say this really quick. With the reviewing different folders, I would only see incident reports of a certain nature, not ones that were filed under different categories.
Right. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think when the IEDs are transferred over to the QM portal through Access, you'll have the ability to track and trend. And so we will have that option and an ability to do that. But when that gets rolled out, I'm not entirely sure.
I'm sorry, you're saying you don't know the timeline on that? Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. Yeah.
Okay.
Correct. I don't know the timeline on that.
Well, that's good to know that we'll be able to have that renewed ability again, because that definitely hurts our members, hurts our ability to oversee when we can't.
No, I agree.
Sarah, go ahead.
I guess in reading a lot of this, one thing that I was thinking about was, like, and I may not know anything here, but like Tanya, I know Tanya is under a lot of, I know that where she works, they're under scrutiny. There's accountability there for sure that's built in with the members. Well, some of us have traveled down there to go see the facilities to take a look at, you know, what's going on down there. So there's definitely oversight. And so I guess I'm kind of wondering if there's that same degree of accountability and oversight for group homes who are contracted with state. I would consider them to be just like employees in a certain sense if they're receiving money. So anyway, there's just my two cents. Sorry.
I noticed Susie and I were both shaking our heads, and from the stories that I've heard, no, there's not. That they are not the same. They're not overseen the same way.
Not even close. Yeah. Trudy, go ahead.
I just was going to remind you that when it comes to our fact-finding cases, when we close cases, we are noting trends, just so you know that documentation is there for you guys to be able to view any trends we are documenting that on closure. So that's one way for investigations.
I'm sorry, you're saying that you're documenting that in the individual incident report?
No, on our closure information, when we close a case, there's documentation that we check for trends. And if there's anything that looks like a trend, then we're putting it in those notes. Aren't you getting those? Yeah, you're getting those. Okay. All right. Good. It doesn't help with everything you read, but it does help when we're closing those, just to you know, look at that if you're curious about trending.
You're referring to the monthly reports, trend reports that we get. Is that what you're referring to?
So when the committee receives the IRs, you're receiving them both when the case is initially, or an incident is initially entered into our system. We just initiate it, right? And then you also get like a closure report, correct?
Yes, we don't read the opening ones because there's not enough information in them.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. But when we're closing, we are remarking, you know, if any trends were identified in the note.
Okay, in the individual. Okay.
Yeah.
Teresa.
Trudy, when did that start? To add that in the closure notes.
Boy, it's been quite a while.
Okay, because in these particular incident reports, I'm just noting because there were a lot, like they were almost daily and sometimes two a day. I didn't really see, once in a while I saw a little notation, but it didn't seem consistent, and it didn't seem consistent with the amount of incident reports that I was reading.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just wondering.
Well, okay. I'd probably have to look at the way that those look for you so I could point it out. Maybe Morgan and Michelle can just show me like a sample of what that looks like so that we could point it out for you. We could do that.
I mean, if it's just in the notes.
The trending issue. It's just a note, yes.
Yeah. So I did see some of them, but it didn't seem consistent with what I was reading.
Okay.
Like that's all I was saying. It just didn't seem consistent.
Yeah.
It wasn't telling you the volume of the incidents that you were reading or the severity of them
or not one of them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Susie, did I answer your question?
Well, I guess I'll know or a committee will know after we've read the, I guess what I'm thinking in my mind is procedurally how it works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not just based upon this specific incident, but for knowledge of future ones to come.
I'm actually in the process now, just FYI, I'm in the process now of setting up an open meeting law training with the Attorney General's office, okay. Which should happen here in the next 4 to 5 weeks, maybe, depending on their schedule and what and their timeline. And I'll be sure to inform everybody about that. And conflict of interest is on there. I did request to have that on there because it's such a gray area for these committees. And there's always a lot of questions that stem from that. So okay. I requested that to be part of her presentation.
Okay.
So as soon as I have a timeline on that, I'll let you know.
Okay.
Great. And I'll be happy to send out the statutes again and the link to the AG's office handbook. Okay. And there is a lot of legalese to it, but it might help clarify some things, or it might confuse you even more. I don't know. but we're here to help, you know, and the liaisons, we have kind of have a tough job too. So we have to, if we see something going down the wrong path, then we have to stop it. Just for the safety of the member and for the committee as well. So, you know, we want full transparency, and I'm in no means telling the committee not to move forward with the issue. Just that only Teresa cannot move forward with it. That's all.
Yeah. Understood. I just thank you. I understand you walk a fine line. And so I think we look forward to the AG's presentation to give us a better understanding. We don't mm-hmm. want to be doing anything that's wrong, but we also don't want to be quashed in restricted. And because all of us, I think, are very passionate about protecting our members. Mm-hmm. I think that's what our job is here. And so don't want to be doing anything that stops us from being able to protect them, you know.
I agree 100%, and I appreciate everything you guys do above and beyond. And just on my end, it's my heart goes out to you guys, and I appreciate everything you do.
Thank you. All right. Next agenda item is DDD staff updates. Morgan, do you want to go round the circle and see who's got what?
Sure.
Thank you.
Katrine, do you have any updates for us?
Hi. Good evening, everyone. An update. We are happy to start another exciting new year, 2025. We have a question for the IOC representatives who are helping PRC with reviewing the behavior plans. First of all, a big thank you to all three ladies for doing so. We know that's an additional task, and there is a lot to review. So thank you very much. And wondering if there would be any other additional IOC representatives interested, excited to review PRC, review behavior plans, just because there is a lot and the numbers are increasing. And the more people we have, the less each person has to review. So just putting that question out there. And then also if there is any questions, barriers with reviewing the behavior plans, accessing, etc., to please let us know so we can help. And that's it.
Thank you. Bernice, do you have any updates?
Thank you. Now, just echo what Katrine just mentioned. Thank you so very much for the support. I know currently we have Ken, and we also have Danelle. We are really, really thankful for your support. I am still concerned too, like Katrine was mentioning, about the number of plans that we have. I know Tanya's helping as well, but yeah, we do have a lot of more plans that we need to get reviewed by IOC. Let us know how we can help with that as well. And again, thanks for supporting us.
Well, maybe Morgan, we can reach out to volunteer service coordinator, whoever's handling that, if there's somebody there now. I know that position got vacated, right? But if we can specifically ask for somebody who's retired and has time to be able to do those, that would be very helpful. Because I think the rest of us are employed, and that's what makes it really hard.
Right. Absolutely. Thank you, Susie. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Trudy, do you have any updates?
Just a couple. District East QA is currently fully staffed, which is excellent. Very happy with the team that we've developed. I wanted to also give you an update. I know that we've got a bunch of questions to provide responses to that we are having to get together. What's happening is, because I've got so many new staff, I'm having to review all of them. So I'm in a bit of a funnel right now. But I do have a whole bunch that will be headed your way very soon. Also, as far as just the month of December, I pulled some numbers. We have 659 entries into our system. That's incidents entered. It was really pretty average for December.
All right, thank you. And Christina.
Yeah, so the main thing that I have to share tonight is our new qualified vendor agreement went into effect last Wednesday on the 1st of January. This was the first really substantial change that has been made in our qualified vendor agreement in over 10 years. So it's really great news for us, as well as members and just everybody within the community as well. Some of the kind of key changes that we are seeing in the qualified vendor agreement is there is revised contract language that is more person-centered. There are requirements for qualified vendors to have staff in key positions that have specific education or specific experience requirements. There's also requirements for qualified vendors to have quality management plans and quality monitoring. This has been revised to reinforce and better support the delivery of quality services. So like I said, the contract rolled out on January 1st. And actually on our website, there is a service list that is located. I can put the link in the chat, but that really kind of highlights all of the services that we're still soliciting for. I believe it was maybe Sarah earlier that had talked about really the importance for therapies for adults. Last time I looked, which was a few days ago, we are soliciting new vendors for at least speech, OT, and PT. So any agency, you know, that does want to submit an application is able to do so through our website. I think that's the biggest thing. Oh, wait, I thought of one more thing. I think many of you know Leah Gibbs has now officially retired. So Angie Venny has stepped into the role of CARES Bureau Chief. She is not here tonight because she is currently at the District West IOC. I will ensure that she is at the next District East IOC so you all can meet her and start to get to know her. She's a pretty amazing person who's been with the division for a while. So we're really excited to have her leadership. But I think that's all I've got now. So. Yeah, Teresa.
Christina, so word on the street
oh, no.
is, yeah,
that, you know, parents in full blown panic mode because their vendor is no longer a vendor as of the first of the year. And that I've heard these astronomical numbers about how many vendors weren't able to renew. And I know some of them probably couldn't renew for one reason or another, but they were pointing it towards it being DDD's fault. So that's just the word on the street. So do you have a number of an overview of how many members are going to lose services or how many vendors we lost?
Well, it looks like some of the last numbers I have that we had reviewed over 1,000 submitted applications, which resulted in 862 approved applications. And so what we had told vendors was that if they didn't get their application in time, or if it was denied or whatever, they're able to resubmit it starting January 1. I don't have the latest numbers of how many members had not been transitioned over. However, it should be very, very minimal. There should have been tons and tons of contingency plans in place. So if you all are hearing of any specific situations, please, please, please don't hesitate to reach out. And we can ensure that we're doing whatever we can to support those members and families as needed.
Okay. And I knew that there were contingency plans and that the date was even extended. So I knew that this was just, you know, hearsay or whatever. So,
yeah, I think last I heard there was, oh gosh, I don't even know, but in terms of especially when we were looking at like living situations, I think there was maybe two members across the state that were going to have some situation with a group home or a placement. And I think maybe the numbers were a little bit higher for other services, but I don't have them in front of me and don't even know if the most recent numbers have come out yet, but it should be really little.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Of course. Anything else? Okay. Thanks.
All right. That's all of the DDD stuff. Oh, you're muted, Susie.
Thank you, Morgan. Trying to get back to that page after I went back to the other screen. Okay. Updates from ADOA.
No updates tonight for me, Susie.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And my camera is not working, so sorry about that. So that's the reason why I'm not on camera. I don't know why it's not coming back on. So not trying to be rude.
That's okay. Okay. Next is for updates from the health plans and access. Let's see. We've got Adriana. Do you have any updates?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, no updates for United Healthcare at this time.
Thank you. And then Camilla?
I don't have any updates either. Thank you.
Thank you. And Frederica?
Hello. I don't have any updates, but happy to take any questions if you guys have any.
I don't have any. Does anybody else have anything for Frederica?
I do not.
All right. Updates from DDD IOC liaison. Morgan?
Yeah, I just have a short one this evening. Like Trudy said, there were 659 incident reports for the month of December for District East. And there were 21 closed for ATPC as well. There was 48 questions submitted, and Trudy said that she will be sending answers guys' way soon. And you guys may have also noticed that we have started sending multiple emails a week informing you of incident reports uploads to the drive. This practice will continue and is necessary for us to meet our compliance of sending these reports within 3 days of completion of the investigation process. So that is going to continue. And then the next DDD IOC statewide chairs meeting is scheduled for January 22nd at 5:30. So any member who would like to attend the meeting is welcome. If you are not a chair or a vice chair, just let us know and we will get you that link. The last one is our public DDD's public town hall meeting. It is scheduled for Thursday, February 6th from 6 to 8 p.m. And that was all of my updates for this evening.
Great. Thank you. And then the next one is about possible action on committee membership. I'm going to assume we don't have any because I didn't hear anything from you. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right, on to incident report and behavior plans. Does anybody have any comment or discussion on incident report and behavior plan issues, questions? Okay. The next is public comment. I don't believe we have anybody from the public on the call, but just in case, is there anybody who would like to make a public comment? Okay. The next is consideration for going into an executive session. We have to vote to be able to go into executive session. The issues were regarding what Teresa had brought to our attention. I know that there was a special folder made in our IR for those particular IRs. Did anybody get a chance to read any of those, or do we want to push this off to the next meeting?
I was able to read a good portion of them. But again, I'm not sure if everybody else was able to.
Has anybody else been able to read them?
I read a little, so maybe we can push it to next month's meeting.
If possible. Is everybody okay with doing that? Let's, Morgan, if we could just push that to next month's meeting. And another item that I would like to add to next month's meeting is Teresa brought up the prospect of grading providers. I would like to have a conversation regarding how that would look. I know as a realtor and general contractor that both of my licenses are up for public inspection at all times on those agencies' website, so you can see if the license is active, if there's any complaints, active or closed, all the details of a complaint. And we're just talking about housing here. We're not talking about taking care of our most vulnerable members of our society, where I think it would be very beneficial for us to have the ability to see those things. So I think it would be great to have a conversation as a committee regarding that issue.
If anybody else has any other items that they wish to put on the agenda, speak now or send an email to any of us or to Morgan so that we can add it to our agenda. And if there isn't anything else, I'm going to pause for a minute to see if there is before we vote to adjourn. All right. If someone would like to make a motion to adjourn.
I move to adjourn this meeting of IOC East.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye. I'll second that motion.
Thank you. I guess we needed that. Okay. Thank you, everyone. Our next meeting is February 12th. At 5 p.m. on the same channel. Thank you, everybody. I think this was a very good meeting. I appreciated all the input and comments.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. All have a great night.
We appreciate you.
Thank you, and Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year.
Bye, everyone.